B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tatum will trigger the inbound. Lobs it into Jaylen Brown. Baseline extended against Hardaway. Right-hand dribble. Jaylen turns the corner, gets in deep, floats it up, and in. Tie game. 9.5 to go. Dallas not calling a timeout. They do not have one. Luka across half court. 4 seconds to go. Luka to his left. Pull up. Here's the deep three for the win.
Dang.
Got it! Luka Doncic does it again.
And that's where we're going to start with last night's ball game and the state of your Celtics. And it just keeps getting worse. Felger and Mads here on a Wednesday, February 24th, I believe is the date. Maybe it's the 23rd. I always forget. I should probably check that before I come on. Either way, I'm in the remote A-hole chair location. Mads and Murray back in our Town Fair Tire Studios. What's the date?
24th.
Yeah, okay, it's the 24th. Either way, same as the 23rd, same as the 22nd. The Celtics are in deep trouble, Mads, and I think their team, their franchise, is at a crossroads, and last night was just another case of it. What's your leadoff thought on that?
So, look, again, the end of the game is fitting to the way their year has gone. They're playing an inferior team. They left them in the game. Dallas, you know, the Celtics fought their way back in it at the end, but the bottom line is their best player was better than either of your two best players and made shots with the game on the line. That said, as a total aside, with a minute and a half after the second review, I shut the game off.
Huh.
I was done with it. I mean, first of all, the team has frustrated me. And secondly, again, at the end of these games, and not to sound like you, I turned it off.
No, there's only one way to watch the end of these NBA games, and that's on a delay with the DVR.
So yeah. I watched it at the you know, in the middle of the night. I woke up in the middle of the night and watched it, and then watched it again this morning to catch the whole sort of final 6 minutes as one entity versus just the last, you know, minute and a half. But when they went back there to review that offensive foul call and the three-point attempt by Brunson, I said, that's it, I'm done. I'm done, I'm out. So at that point, I didn't really care whether they won or lost, and I said, screw it, I'm out.
Yeah, the apathy is warranted, though, because they are inventing new and more brutal ways to lose with every game now. I mean, that was unbelievable, especially that they pulled themselves back into it. And it's like, oh, okay, they're actually going to pull this off. No. So I dubbed the night when it was over on Twitter. That was wet sausage night in Dallas, because you got a big wet sausage of reality across the face. Wet sausage. Because like Maz mentioned, here's a fact. Tatum, Brown, they're not on the level of Luka Doncic. They never will be. That kid is a stone-cold killer. Those other two, especially Tatum, soft. Or really, just maybe, did you realize now, wet sausage of reality? They're not as talented as Luka Doncic, period. Those last two threes, especially the first one, where he dribbled basically the whole shot clock down and then shot it over Tice. Are you kidding me? That's a shot that Tatum wishes and probably thinks he can make and never will. So there, that was my biggest takeaway. Those two are not on Doncic's level and never will be.
Okay. Moist sausage. Again, gives it just a little bit more texture there, Murray. But either way, I mean, apathy is not the word I would use.
Ooh, wet sausage.
There you go. To me, that's not it. I think Mavs was really just talking about the grind of getting through those replays and timeouts. And
oh, it's brutal.
That sort of stuff at the end of games, which, again, the only way to watch the end of an NBA game is on the DVR. You can't sit through all of it. It's just you just get too impatient. But in terms of the I feel Celtics fans have woken up and are as edgy about their team as they've been in a long time, and they should be. It's warranted. I think they're in trouble. And for the first time in 8 years, I feel like they're going in the wrong direction, and something really has to happen. They have to have a lightning strike for them to get back on track of being a championship team. I think it's gone off the rails, frankly. But part of me, you know, it in some ways last night, it was a little bit better in that they fought back at the end. Mm. They didn't just lay down and, you know, suffer the defeat. They were 12 down at one point there late in the fourth quarter, and they came back in the last 2-3 minutes and got some breaks. And I thought Dallas totally shut it down, by the way, and took some stupid shots and, you know, really slowed the game down, played into it. But either way, you came back. You came back and made it a game, and you made your shots too. I mean, those two Jaylen Brown shots to tie the game each time or to get you in it there, those were good possessions and good shots. And so you did fight to the end and lost to a better player. Like, that's sort of the good news. The bad news is it never should have been in that spot. You should be a better team than Dallas. You should be. You have better players. They were on a back-to-back. And I don't think Dallas played that well. I don't think Doncic played that well. I don't think he was his usual, yet totally dominant self. At the end, he obviously won it for him, but I don't think he was at his best last night. Do you, Maz? Do you think, like, Doncic? Do you think Doncic did to you what Trae Young did to you or what Jokic did to you? Like, I don't compare that night last night to what some of these previous games have been.
No, I mean, it's not as flashy with him, though, like, because a lot of them are on passes and things like that. So I just think he is, at the offensive end of the floor, I think the guy's brilliant. I do. I think he's brilliant. So it doesn't mean he didn't put up 40. But to me, every play they made on offense was a result of him. I pretty much felt that way.
I'm just saying Dallas was there to be had. And I don't know. It felt like he was on the bench quite a bit. I don't follow their minutes and what it is, but it was their second of back-to-backs. And I don't feel Doncic just dominated like Trae Young did. He made those shots at the end, I feel like. Otherwise, you got beat by that Brunson kid. I mean, and Dallas is not a good team. They got a player. They got one guy. And you've got your big three there. You're rested. They're not. Your GM has and coach have sounded the alarm bells. They've put you on notice now for a week. You're at 500. That's a game you just impose your will. I mean, the Celtics should be a better team than Dallas. Much better. And if they just impose their will, that's not a game, and it's not in a position for Doncic to make those shots at the end. So to me, that's the story. There's something fundamentally wrong with this team. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And a couple indications coming, you know, sort of after the game. One is, and I was watching it in real time, and I didn't really think much of it, but was there something going on in the locker room again last night? Chair throwing was... You know, OG Willeker's there like, calm down, guys. Was he there? Because few people mentioned this during both Brown and Tatum's presser, Murray. You're not in your head?
Yeah, I thought something was up immediately because Brown came out first. So first it was Stevens, and then I saw, you know, some of the beat reporters saying, you know, Tatum and Brown are taking longer than usual. So immediately my antenna goes up like, oh, there's yelling. And then Brown comes out. And you kept hearing, like, loud bangs. And I thought to myself, I didn't tweet anything at the time, but I was like, something going on there? Like people getting pushed into lockers? Like it sounded odd. And then Tatum comes out, and you had the same kind of thing, and maybe we'll get to some of the clips, but there's
Let's do it now.
Okay. I mean,
Tatum starts, and he sort of, his eyes sort of glance. He doesn't really turn his head, but his eyes are sort of, feels like they're looking at something in the corner of the room.
Yeah, there he's looking to the left, and then he does this thing where
and
it's
then
like
he puts his forehead in his hands, like, oh god.
Yeah, I don't know if you can read it any other way. He does the oh, you got to be kidding me type of thing, head into his hands, and then you hear what I think, and I think most people think is Brad Stevens going, guys.
Yeah, Jimmy, do you have the whole clip?
Guys, how do you guys turn this thing around right now in terms of the consistency?
Guys, take one game at a time. We got to win first.
So you think that Stevens going, guys?
That's what it sounds like to me. And then you hear more bangs, and then they cut to it, and Abby Chin is back in studios, like, apologizing for a swear that went out that I certainly didn't hear. But
expletive, yeah. She said expletive, yep.
Yeah, like, something was going on there.
So it's still not right. There's still something wrong. And to me, again, another thing is just Mike Gorman.
Sean Corrales.
We apologize for the expletive.
Thanks, Abby. Mike Gorman, you know, our play-by-play guy, I say R, you know, 98.5, the sports voice of the Celtics, NBC Sports Boston, excuse me. You know, Mike Gorman.
This is amazing.
Who is just, he is on a scorched earth campaign against his basketball team. I mean, when I tell you, I've never heard Mike Gorman talk like this. I've never heard Mike Gorman talk like this by half. I mean, he is a famous, well-established local play-by-play guy once told me, we have a guiding philosophy, we meaning the team play-by-play broadcasters, never missed an opportunity to say nothing. That's the motto they go by. I'm not going to tell you who told me that, but I'm sure Mike Gorman adheres to it because he's the best of the best. The local play-by-play guy of the local team lives by a motto, never miss an opportunity to say nothing. And Mike Gorman, the last 2 weeks, has ripped this team. I felt today, I'm a Toucher and Rich, he was almost reading from a script like he was Cam and Taunton or one of our callers calling to rip the Celtics, where it almost felt like he had prepared remarks to rip this team to shreds. Let me just give you a little example. Again, Toucher and Rich, catch the full interview at 98.5thesportshub.com or on the app. Number one, Jimmy, he's almost mocking the fact. He's mocking the fact, it's almost, that Tatum and Brown have made the All-Star game. Go ahead.
The All-Star game is a perfect showcase for those two guys because they have an abundance of individual skills, and that's what the All-Star game is all about, individuals going one-on-one, and we know about going one-on-one. Unfortunately, last time I looked, basketball was a team game. No, it's not tennis. It's a team game. And we just play like we met on the bus on the way over. It's really sad to watch these guys right now.
We play like we just met on the bus on the way over. It's sad to watch these guys right now. The All-Star Game is a perfect place for these two because all they do is play individual basketball. I'd paraphrase that last part, but that's basically the sentiment of the freaking play-by-play guy.
He's right.
The team broadcaster. Of course he's right. But what wonderful commentary by Mike Gorman. And, you know, good for him. But I'll just say in the same breath, you know, Maz, he's getting a green light from somewhere in the organization because there is no way the team broadcaster, who is essentially employed by the team, is doing that unless he's gotten the go-ahead or he's, you know, been told or something. He's not, you're not doing that on your own as a play-by-play guy unless you're ready to walk out the door and leave the job. I am sick of these jokers. I'm done looking. I'm retiring anyway, so I'm just going to let it fly. I don't think that's Mike. I hope it's not Mike because he's as good as it gets. So what this says to me is the team's at a little bit of a war with Brown and Tatum, and the play-by-play guy has been given the green light to go ahead and give it to him. Listen to this one. Number two, he basically blames Tatum and Brown by name. 1-2 on the list. Go ahead, number
two. Now, am I saying that Tatum and Brown are responsible for the Celtics' current record? Yeah, I am. I really believe that's
stop.
The case.
Because am I saying best? That – I mean, how many times do you hear a play-by-play guy say, now, am I saying that our best players are responsible for this? Of course I'm not. It's not about the best players. It's about – No. He says, am I saying this is about Brown and Tatum? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's about Brown and Tatum. I mean, think of that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Give me the whole cut, Jimmy. Number two, I'm sorry.
Now, am I saying that Tatum and Brown are responsible for the Celtics' current record? Yeah, I am. I really believe that to be the case. Because when you're the best player on a team, you also get the glory. You also get the gas. You also have to lead by example. If you expect your teammates to be unselfish, you've got to be unselfish. If you expect your teammates to play hard, you've got to play hard all the time. It's terrific that you can get 27 tonight, but how about 22 and the Seas win the game? Enough with the one-on-one at the end of every quarter. Enough with the same no assists over the course of a half. It's really tough to watch these guys play right now. They do play like they just met. I don't think it's Brad Stevens' fault. I think he's a coach. He's doing what he's done all along to make him one of the better coaches in the game. Celtics would be crazy to get rid of him right now. But more importantly, they need these two guys to come back from the All-Star break and stop thinking in individual terms, stop thinking in terms of numbers that they're getting, and stop looking at the wins and the losses. Stop looking at how many assists you pile up over a game. Celtics should have between 25 and 30. Instead, the number is usually around 15 to 16. This team just needs to be more unselfish, and it needs to start at the top. And the top right now is Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and they need to respond. They can go have their weekend in Atlanta. They can go play that game. But when they come back to business here in Boston, they're going to start thinking about winning games and not about getting numbers.
Go have your weekend in Atlanta. Oh, this is so good.
Oh, it is. It's great. Yeah. It's absolutely. It couldn't come from a better source for all the reasons you said, because it's one thing for people like us to rant and rave.
Right.
Gorman is the, aside from being, you know, a team broadcaster, he's the consummate gentleman.
Oh.
He never says a bad thing about anybody, really.
And he just, in a very classy,
he's had it,
called those two a couple of selfish a-holes.
Oh, my God. I mean, he eviscerated them. And that, go have your fun. You know, I guess it's all you care about is those individual numbers and the All-Star game. But when you come back, like, wow. And so that's just, and it's not just the commentary, which is dead on. It's where it's coming from and what I think it means behind the scenes is that he's green-lighted. You know, he's green-lighted to do that.
Well, I was going to say, especially the second one. Like the first time, you know, which a week ago, you heard that. And then if the team was upset about it, they would have said, hey, Mike.
Tone it down, yeah.
Right. Dial it back. Okay, we can't be that blunt about it. He came out the next week and was more aggressive. And I'm just trying to put two and two together. On one of the pregame shows one night, Stevens was talking to Sean Grandy, and he said something about how, you know, Mike Gorman made some comments, and Steven said, yeah, I know, I enjoy Mike. I go out to dinner with him on the road, blah, blah, blah. And I immediately said, like, I put two and two together and said, well, he's probably reflecting how the coach feels. And so how could he not? How can Stevens like this? How can anybody like it?
Okay, how does the owner feel about it? We will find out today. We're going to talk to Wick Grosbeck later on in the program. That'll be in the 4 o'clock hour. So we know you have a lot of pent-up emotions about the Celtics. We're going to let you get it out right now. We're going to hit on a bunch of different things until we get to the 4 o'clock hour. Then we'll circle back to this with Wick Grosbeck, and we'll take your calls starting now, right after these words.
Sports, Austin's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, good. Hold on, I have a landline. This is my landline, yep.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tatum. Gotta throw it somewhere. It's off the rim. Offensive rebound. Tucker was there, but that doesn't do you any good. And just when it looked like the Celtics had pulled off a miracle in Dallas and turned this ship around, Luka Doncic goes Luka Doncic on them, drills 2 monster threes in the final seconds, and the Celtics are beaten again at the buzzer. The final score, Dallas 110, Boston 107.
All right, that's how it ended last night here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Again, Wick Grosbeck will join us in the 4 o'clock hour to discuss the state of his team, which is not pretty right now. But to your calls, as promised here. Here's Danny in Nashville. Hi, Danny. Go ahead, please.
Listen, Tatum and Brown, they don't even like each other. Yeah, we get it. They're individually talented. We know they're all-stars. Great. But Tatum isn't a leader. He cares about his stats. He cares about being the man, but not the man to lead. And my point is this. Watch the game beginning to end. Kemba, he'll talk to Pritchard. Brown will talk to Rob Williams, whoever, in the huddle, in between the plays. They communicate. Brown and Tatum don't even talk to each other. They care about their stats. They care about being the man, but no one knows who's in charge, and the young guys don't have anyone to follow, and they'll never make it anywhere this way. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Do you guys sense that?
I don't sense that they dislike each other. I mean, everything I've heard is that they get along fine. Well. Yeah. I don't think that's it, but I do think there's a leadership issue, and I think that that shows in the way they play, because I think a player that's a real leader sets a certain tone. I can't say this enough times. In that league, the team takes on the identity of your best player. And if you're inconsistent and mediocre, then that's what your best player is in terms of his leadership. And so, to me, I absolutely draw a line there. I don't think there's any question.
Or if you care about the wrong things. And I'll get to that in 1 second. But first, Joe in Medford. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, so I'm the angry Celtics season ticket holder who's been paying and watching them put this product on the floor. And I just want to say that I want to push back against the green glasses whole thing where we're all just happy about everything with the Celtics. I think it's time for Brad and Danny to get on the same page, because here's my theory that I realized recently. There's a redundance problem. Teams that have great players, but they're redundant at the position, like with Tatum and Brown, they're both swingmen, they don't win, just like the Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George. But teams that are that have great players at different positions, Kobe and Shaq, Anthony Davis and LeBron, Steph and Durant, they do win. So the Celtics are redundant, and they're never going to get out of this until they either get a legit big man who can anchor the paint on both sides of the court or get rid of Jaylen or Tatum. They're never going to be good.
Okay, Joe, and that's an interesting theory. The first piece about Celtics fans and, you know, eternally optimistic and positive towards their team, that hasn't been the case the last couple of weeks. I think you guys have woken up a little bit, and good. You know, the team obviously deserves it. Maybe it took this to wake you up, but I feel that Greenland, I think there's tremors in Greenland, Maz, like I've never really felt before, and I think they're deserved. So that's that first piece. The second piece, boy, you can't win with 2 dominant wings. They've got to be either a wing and a point guard or a wing and a big guy. Do you believe that?
No. No, I don't, because, and again, look, I would tell you that
Would it surprise you one bit if the Clippers win at all this year?
No.
Paul George and Kawhi Leonard?
No, when Golden State won its first one, what were they?
They're both guards, yes, shooting guards.
Right? So I just think, now look, if they comp, I don't think it has anything to do with position. I think guys who can complement one another, that's important. And so, use the Pierce-Allen-Garnett model. Garnett was a great defender. Pierce was a great scorer. Allen was a great pure shooter. So there's a skill set that they each have that they're elite at. Fine. Yeah, I mean, you want to tell me that that works? I wouldn't disagree with you. But I don't think it's because they have two wings. I don't think it's that.
We got Adam in Nashua. Hi, Adam. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I got a little bone to pick with little Mikey G, Mike Gorman. Just hear me out real quick. First of all, it's the NBA. The superstars are going to shoot the ball 20 times. And I heard Gorman saying, oh, make the extra pass. This roster, what, are we going to pass the ball in the corner so Grant Williams can shoot it off the side of the backboard? I got three blame pies. First one, Kemba Walker. If he was healthy and being himself, we'd have a couple more wins. Brad Stevens, the Jason Garrett of the NBA. Clap, 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 whee, clap, clap. They've tuned him out. And last but not least, Danny Ainge. I feel like I call every single year at this time where we can't get a big guy that doesn't suck. Like, we have Tristan Thompson, the black hole, gets an offensive rebound and just, and we got Bobo the Clown putting in layups over Tice. Like, can we get a big guy one time?
Oh, my God. That guy's a freaking oaf. He's a monster. Bobo. What's his full name? What's his real name?
My Giant?
Yeah. Oh, my God. That guy's a freak.
I mean, seriously, that's what he felt like to me. Like, I thought it was Jack climbing up the beanstalk and found that guy waiting up there.
Frankenstein's monster. But, you know, I don't mean to be mean or anything. I'm sorry. It's probably not very nice. But, wow. That guy's a load.
It was like George Murison. Remember him with the Wizards here, with Bullets years ago?
Of course. But so the caller doesn't want to blame the best players. I'm sorry. I disagree with the caller.
That's where I start.
Begins and ends with the best players. That's who sets the tone on those teams, both on the floor, off the floor, during the game, in the locker room, the whole thing. It's all centered around those top players, now more than ever. And it's always been that way, but now more than ever.
Oh, totally. And can I give you one sequence in the game that really sent me into orbit?
Yep.
Okay, it was, and again, I don't remember whether I watched it this morning or last night or whatever, because I once I got to those stoppages, I couldn't take it anymore. So Jason Tatum picked off a pass. The Mavs turned it over. Tatum picked off a pass with about a minute to go, and the Celtics broke up the floor, and they had numbers. Tatum took about three dribbles, then decided to pass, and the ball got picked off, and he gave it right back.
Yeah, it went right to Doncic, I believe.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes.
And like,
yes.
So yes. As soon as he got possession, I said, pass it. Up the floor. You got it. Go. And he didn't. He took too long. And so this is to me, it was them in a nutshell. When you get the ball, the first thing you should be doing is looking up the floor. Find the open guy. You got them on their heels. What are you dribbling for other than the fact that you want to dribble?
So do these guys get it? Does the modern young NBA player get it? Too many don't. This I thought was the best thing Gorman said all morning. And he was talking about something Scal told him off the air. And he made it clear. I didn't include it in the cut here. But after the fact, he said these weren't Celtics that Scal was referring to, or that, and I don't know if he was then covering for himself and they were, so I don't know. But just, Jimmy, play me number three about what matters for these young guys.
Scal brought out a great point. I couldn't get it out of him on the air last night. He knows a lot of these players, and these guys have all these clauses in their contracts that sum up to $1 million if they make an all-star team. So their motivation for the first half of the season is not so much to see their team win, it's for them to get numbers so they can get into the all-star game.
Oh,
and
that sucks.
Scal said something else to me, which really stunned me. He said, a lot of players I talk to, if you say to them, which would you rather have, an NBA championship or an All-Star game? The answer is an All-Star game.
Well, I can tell you who he's talking about there.
Go ahead.
Brown. Jaylen Brown's got like a $1.3 million incentive in his contract. I saw it online the other day. He's got one of the higher incentives in the league. He's probably talking about Jaylen Brown.
This matters to Tatum, too, because you know what else matters to the young NBA player? What their rating is in NBA 2K.
Oh, God, don't, please. Don't,
oh,
don't,
Mike,
do
you'll want to blow your brains out over this.
No. Well, look, and in Tatum's case, we all know he's got the all-NBA team incentive that he gets another $30 million on his contract.
It goes
from
$162 million to $195 million.
Okay, well, so there you go.
That's the Supermax thing, right?
Yeah.
Supermax.
Yeah, but he's got to make the All-NBA team in order to qualify for it.
And with AD injured, he's got a better chance of doing it.
But really, look, again, whether it's Brown in the All-Star game or Tatum in the contract, it's the same thing. You're talking about 20-something guys who think they've arrived, and now they've gotten their big contracts, and they want to make their money, and they want to be the guy. And they're putting it ahead of winning.
these guys, and I've said this for a while, just in a different way, I think the single most important thing to a young NBA player, most of them, is their brand. Their brand. So what does that mean? Their effing video game rating. Oh, Murray, don't even say that, please.
Oh, Mike, I'll pull a clip for you. It's from Tatum last October when he found out he was a 90 and he was like pants off for it. He, you know, one of the developers of the game held a Zoom with him. And he couldn't have. He was tickled about it. Like, oh no, I've been hoping for this. Like, it'll make you crazy.
So that is, you know, disgusting. Never mind the incentive in the contract. I think, you know, as important as $1 million to make the All-Star team, it's just the status. You know, I think we've been over this. Like that Furkacte All-Star game and that weekend is so important to these guys. Like, just so over the top important. And I think it's so out of whack. It's just so the weekend has nothing to do with ultimately winning in a team sport, but it's just the priorities are just so out of whack in that sport with that stupid All-Star game. And so Gorman said he wasn't talking about Celtics players, but maybe that was the play-by-play guy coming through there a little bit, because it sure reeks of these guys. You know, didn't they get? I mean, Jaylen Brown already thinks he won six. Like, you know, it's more important for these guys to have their brand, their marketing, their shoe, their video game rating, the status, you know, be able to enter All-Star weekend as being in that club and on that level, and that's what matters to those guys. And the championship, secondary consideration. And that is freaking gross. It is gross. More of your thoughts on this coming up this hour. Any leftover Tiger Woods thoughts, we'll take them next as well. The very latest with Big Jim Murray first.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Getting you through the afternoon. One take at a time.
Oh, my gosh. It was unbelievable.
It's Felger and Mass.
So why don't you just do that? Just do that thing.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub and now the radio.com app.
Well, it's tragic to hear this. Yes. It's tragic to hear this. And it's just an awful circumstance. And I'm just listening to the details that you all are giving and catching up on this. But I'm speechless, really.
Yeah.
It's quite sad to think of everything that Tiger has gone through, the joy that he has brought to all of us in the golf world and to sports, and to hear this is just it's shocking.
Guys, that's our buddy Jim Gray, almost in tears. The Tiger news, Tiger Woods news yesterday. And I just play it to get into the, you know, I mean, any follow-up thoughts on Tiger Woods? I just have one, and that is I'm having a hard time treating this as, like, the tragedy that I feel is coming across the airwaves in some cases, certainly by Jim Gray. I mean, now that we know that he's quote-unquote okay, I mean,
Mike, not, if you heard that clip and didn't know the story, you'd think he was dead, right?
Yes. Or, you know... Yes, that was right. That he had passed. He just broke his legs. He's in a it's a bad injury. He really hurt himself. His golf career is in jeopardy, and all of that. So I'm not. I don't mean to make light of it, but I guess I'm the wrong person for the Tiger Woods story, for, you know, two reasons. One, it is a failing of mine. It's a character defect. I just lack a little bit of the sympathy gene. And I'll just say that up front. I'm not. It's a failing of mine. I'm just, in general, I lack that gene. But number two, I've never been a huge Tiger Woods fan. So you sort of put these two together. And number three, it's kind of most of his stuff are self-inflicted. I mean, it was a single car accident. There was barely any traffic on the road. So whether he was impaired, it doesn't seem like he was, or careless, or something. It's like whatever happened, unless there was a mechanical failure I don't know about, or he was cut off, which hasn't been reported. We don't know about that. So if any of that happened, then I take this all back. But it just feels like he didn't know how to drive, or he lost control of his car, and it's sort of another self-inflicted thing.
Yeah, I don't like the attitude of, you know, don't you speculate. Well, I think it is fair to speculate because given his history, and it does look like there could be operator error there. I think that's okay to say that. And if we end up wrong, that's okay. Like, it's great that he's going to be okay. Is his career ever going to be back on track again? Probably not. But in the grand scheme of things, given the nature of the accident, he survived. That's great news. And that clip and some of the other stuff I've heard, it's like, you know, a president didn't get assassinated.
Well, I was just going to say, Murray, and look, as it pertains to Jim Gray, my personal feeling is that if you are doing the job and you start crying on the air, then you're not doing your job. That's my feeling, and I don't mean to be insensitive towards Jim Gray, but he's probably too close to Tiger to give an objective and honest assessment of the situation. Now, that said, I draw a distinction between Tiger on Thanksgiving with his wife bashing in the windshield and him having affairs, that destroyed his family, hurt his wife, hurt his kids, and incidents in which he hurts himself. And so I think the guy's a mess, and I do have compassion for him for being a mess. At the same time, I'd feel very differently if someone else got hurt in this accident. He is lucky he didn't hurt someone else. He's lucky that in flying off the road, he didn't kill a mother who was driving her two kids or something of the like. And the same is true for the night that he fell asleep behind the wheel. Because if it did happen that way, the narrative would be very, very different. I can look at the last two instances or events and say, this is a guy who is self-destructing. He's completely falling apart. He can't handle it all. He can't deal with the world. He can't deal with the end of his golf career. He can't deal with the fact that he was raised to be a robot and an a-hole. And so, which is really what it was. I mean, so again, look, I read the book. I watched the documentary. And so there are elements of his life that I have great compassion for. Because I think in some ways he got screwed. That said, these are things he's doing to himself now. Like, he just can't stop.
So that's the self-inflicted part is really what won't bring out the sympathy gene either. It's like self-inflicted. And whether it was just simple carelessness, late for a job, and he was rushing and reached down for the cell phone or whatever. I watch the Greenberg show, the ESPN show in the mornings usually, and just the hushed, reverential tones. It's like, guys, I mean, oh, my Lord. His career has not been cut short. I mean, and it might be, he may not be a competitive golfer anymore, but he's had all the time in the world to fulfill his destiny as a golfer. And what stood in the way of that? Most of it was his own failings and his own problems and his own self-inflicted wounds. He had injuries that, you know, maybe were not self-inflicted, but maybe some were. The way he trained, the weight he put on, the things he was doing to train. I don't know. I mean, but he had more than enough time to fulfill his destiny as a golfer, and he came up short of what people, you know, projected for him and what he projected for himself. He never got past Jack, and he's probably not going to get past Jack, and that's his own doing. It's not like there was, you know, I don't feel sorry for him in that regard. He had all the time in the world to do it, and he didn't do it. And I'm glad he's okay. I'm glad no one got hurt. I'm not going to go too far with that, but it just feels a little much.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, he's still a human being. And so, and I told you, I've started to like Tiger more in recent years than I ever did, because I feel like he's acknowledged his flaws, he's acknowledged his failings, and he's actually starting to develop as a human being.
I would agree. Yeah, I think he's made more of an effort to be better.
I've come to the conclusion the guy can't cope with it. He can't. He's cracking up, whether it's the back surgeries or what he did to people or whatever it is. He can't cope with it, and it's now self-destructive behavior. There's no other way to look at it.
So, and I agree, Matt. Like, the last Masters, I was rooting for him, you know, because that was truly a comeback story and I do believe he is more human than he's been in the past, more relatable. Like, for the first, 10 years of his career, whatever that was, he was just a machine.
Robot.
It was just a freaking machine, and I didn't feel there were any layers to him. I didn't feel there was any nuance. It was just a, you know, golf ball hitting marketing machine that you didn't know if it was real or not. And so, like, I completely rooted against him during those times and couldn't relate to him. I agree with you. Later on in life, more human, failed like we all are. He has his failings, and So, like I get all that. And, you know, I feel bad that this happened to him. And I do. But I don't know. That's just my follow-up thought on the Tiger Woods thought. If you have any of those, we'll take them. Any Celtics thoughts? I know you got them. We'll continue with them. Wick Grosbeck is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll come back with our long commercial-free segment next and also give you a little Red Sox thought. So don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger Mass.
What are you talking about?
Number one.
Tell us what we said. Point A to point B, please.
Because they know how to build winning relationships.
No one keeps track of it other than you. We don't. The listeners don't. They have no idea what you're talking about.
Felger Mass.
Oh, I think he's a tool bag.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
First question. How frustrating was it to hit 213 last year? What were some of the problems you had? And what did you do in the offseason to improve and hit a 213 with less than normal home runs power?
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks for reminding me that.
MVP so far of Red Sox camp is Johnny Miller. Getting in all these guys' heads right out of the chute. That's J.D. Martinez. J.D. Martinez is our Red Sox star of the day. What do you got on him specifically, Mass?
Well, so yesterday, J.D. Martinez basically admitted that he had trouble mentally and that because of COVID and everything else, he had a hard time taking the season seriously. Thank you. Thank you for admitting what I believed all along. You quit. You shut it down. We felt all along, I think going into last year with COVID and everything else and Cora and Betts, I said, one thing I think we'll find out is who the professionals on the Red Sox are, who are going to be the guys that try and that play and that commit to actually doing their best. And that doesn't mean 60 games out of 60 games. This guy did not qualify. To me, what we found out is that this guy will cave. So Bogarts, I'm not saying it was perfect, but overall, I thought he gave an honest effort. Devers started out like crap, and when the games got more meaningless, played better, which to me says he could have shut it down. He didn't, and so I think Devers actually tried. I think he sucks defensively, but I think he tried. Christian Vasquez, I think he tried. Verdugo tried. So I can look at those guys with a straight face. I have a hard time doing that with J.D. Martinez.
It's stunning honesty, and part of me can't believe it because you usually don't get that, especially from anyone on the Red Sox. But I don't know. Like, I appreciate it, too, because how many of us also kind of checked out for a little while? I know I did, you know, for a time and uncertainty and everything with the pandemic. But the level of his checkout, though, was kind of gross. At some point, you got to get it together, dude.
Well, let's pick up the rest of the answer here. Number two, Jimmy, go ahead. If we could, please. J.D. Martinez yesterday in Fort Myers.
Yeah, so I kind of, you know, it was obviously a rough 2 months. And it was one of those things I felt like I really wasn't prepared for last year. Felt like it kind of caught me off guard with whether we were going to play, whether we weren't. Stuff like that. So I just kind of went back to doing the same thing I always do and staying ready, staying prepared for the whole season, you know, like I usually do. I felt like last year when they shut down spring training, it was one of those things where like, are we going to play? Are we not? Type deal. And, you know, it was my fault. I take accountability for that because I didn't stay ready. And I think this year I said to myself, I said, they're not getting me again. They're not catching me off guard. So, you know, I stayed ready the whole time.
Okay, good for him. Good for him. He admitted it, took accountability. We'll take it. Fine. Good, JD. Excellent. Here's one thing I don't give him a pass on, and I talk about the sympathy gene. Zero sympathy for this. He was also mixed up, Maz, and messed up because he couldn't go to his video.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because this apparently wasn't to do with the cheating stuff. It was socially distant stuff. And, you know, again, in just reading it, well, I'll read from the Globe story. Last season, Martinez expressed his frustration with MLB's decision to suspend in-game video for 2020. In an unprecedented season, the suspension of in-game video which is a resource utilized by players across the league, was MLB's attempt to socially distance players as much as possible. In a normal season, hitters are allowed to go into terminals underneath the dugout and watch their previous at-bats, or cornerstone of Martinez's process. Not having it, Martinez acknowledged, was a difficult adjustment. So he's got. We have an answer on that here coming up. Now, this year, apparently, they're going to have iPad tablets in there that you can watch in the dugout or in the clubhouse there in between at-bats to watch your at-bat, but they have to edit it in a certain way or shoot it in a certain way where you can't see the catcher's signals, because that is now going back to the cheating thing, and obviously you and your manager are front and center with all of that. But the video thing, Maz, this one I have less of a, you know, I don't want to hear about your video, man.
Well, so I don't think it should be allowed in the dugout at all. I don't know why they allow it in game, period.
It's crazy.
Yeah, to me, this is the whole point of playing the game. You got to make decisions on the fly in real time without the use of technology. I'll say this forever. They shouldn't allow use of technology. Once the game starts, you shouldn't be able to leave the dugout.
How did Ted Williams ever hit 400 without video?
Exactly.
How do you ever do it?
Exactly. Because he paid attention during the game and he was skilled. And so this is what the challenge is. So to me, when the game starts, all that stuff should be out.
Oh, totally. And to me, I think it just ties in with the paralysis by analysis that has just, you know, crippled that sport. It's like, you know, it's just everyone sort of lost their feel for the game and what the game is. It's just all stats, all analytics, and now the you know, the batters are in there circumcising the mosquito on the video in between every at-bat and every pitch. And it's like, it's just too much. Like, just play. Again, back to my slogan, when I become commissioner of sports, just play, JD, just play. So, I have no sympathy on this. Johnny asked him about this as well. Let's hear his answer, Stu, if we could.
How much did them not having to see the video hurt you?
I think it definitely hurt me a bit. I think obviously I had to change my routine. It was something I wasn't used to, something I grew up with in the minors. Again, like I said a million times, it's part of my routine, and it was something that kind of just got taken away from me. But I'm excited that this year we're going to have it back in a sense. We're going to have some kind of videos where we can look at our swings and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to getting back to, you know, somewhat normal baseball during these crazy times.
I mean, it's true. Like, what? No other sport. They can't do it in football. They give you Polaroids on the sidelines, right? And I don't even think you're allowed to look at video at halftime. I think that was part of one of the untold things about Spygate way back with the Patriots, that they were actually using video at halftime, and you're not even allowed to do that. So you're not. I guess they do allow it in hockey. There's those iPads back there to check the offside stuff. But most sports don't have video. It's like the NBA coach has video there on the sideline. Why in baseball do they get video on the dugout or in the clubhouse?
I hate it. I don't know. I hate it. And again, like I equate that to sort of like in golf, they don't allow training aids on the course. It's not like you can take out your swing trainer and practice it while you're going up the fairway to get your tempo. The point is, once the match starts, you have to regulate that stuff on your own. That's the whole challenge of it, or one of the challenges of it. And so, like, what? In baseball now, you get to look and see, ooh, if the catcher does this or he moves that. Like, you can say that you're looking. What exactly are you looking for? You're not just studying your swing. That's bullcrap. There's no way they're just studying their swings. No way. They're looking for tells and tips on the part of the catcher, where he moves. If this happens, they're going to throw this. That's what they're looking for. It should not be allowed. I'm totally against it.
Okay, so there's your Red Sox minute. But it's just, I'd say J.D. Martinez, though, as much as he kind of bugs me a little bit. You know, he got a little whiff of Adrian Gonzalez there or something. You know, I think if baseball were more prominent and the Red Sox were better, he'd be a guy that would be a real lightning rod on that team. I think people would be agitated by him. But he should be better this year than last. He can't be much worse than last year. Especially if he has now, you know, he knows he's prepared. He's not going to be thrown off by the pandemic. He's going to have his precious video. He should be better. And it's one of the reasons the Red Sox should be better. Should be. So there's the good news on J.D. Martinez. All right, got a few other items. Again, Wick Grossbeck is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. We want to get a few of the things off the table. We got to Tiger. We got to the Red Sox. I've got an NFL free agency thought. NFL free agency begins 3 weeks from today. 3 weeks and an hour from right now, NFL free agency begins. So I've got a thought on that. We'll get to it right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.